I'll call your attention this evening to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. Luke 15. We're going to cover the whole chapter tonight. Now, don't freak out. We're just going to hit the mountain peaks. But there's a couple of key thoughts that I want to give to you out of these parables tonight. There are actually three parables that we're going to cover. And so the title is A Sheep, A Coin, and A Son. And have you ever lost something and then found it? And it's like, that's good. That is good. There's times that I found something that did not belong to me that brought me great joy. Years ago, I was driving a school bus for the insurance, and I remember a friend of mine named Mike Lawrence. I guess I thought about this because I was going through some pictures today. Abigail has got something going. I have no idea what, where she needed a picture of me when I was a baby, and now she's already got one of me now. And she's getting it from several different people. So I don't know what concoction she's got going, but I just know that I was going through pictures today, and we came across one, and I say we. Debbie was sitting there in the floor, and AJ was there throwing pictures all over the place. But there was one, and there was a little small clip, and it was a picture of Sarah when she was probably about 10 years old, maybe 11, and she had a friend named Sarah, and her name was Sarah Lawrence. Well, her dad and I were good friends. He used to love refereeing ball, and so he would call me from time to time and say, "Hey, Tommy, I need you to come help me referee tonight." Well, I had not done that in a while, and so I had been painting and working in my referee shoes. And so, I mean, they were gnarly looking. And I told him, I said, "Mike, listen, I can't come referee." I said, "If I came with the only black shoes I got are dress shoes." And he goes, "I don't care what you come in." And so I'm thinking, "Lord, I don't want to look like Willie Lump Lump out there, and I want to, you know, look like I know what I'm doing." And so I said, "Lord, I need you to give me a pair of shoes for $40. And after I got done with the bus route, dropping the munchkins off, I pulled into the old Kroger. Now there's a big old government building down there in Snellville where it was at. But at one time there was a Kroger, and they had athletic shoe store there. I forget what the name of it was, but it was kind of to the left of Kroger. And I pulled in, I went in, and right there they had black shoes on sale. But they didn't have my size. And I'm like, "Lord, I ask you for a good price, because I'm only going to make $45 tonight. I need these shoes so that I don't go in the hole." And they were $40. And so I'm like, "Lord, you didn't give me my size. I mean, I've got 9s and 10s and 13s, but there's no 11. And so I'm just kind of moaning a little bit. And so then the guy goes, "Well, now over here we've got some 11s in this brand." And I'm going, "Yeah, and they're $60. I'm fixing to go in the hole referee, and I'm going to be going to hole $15 tonight." And so finally I'm thinking, "I got to be there in 45 minutes. All right, give me the shoes." I got the shoes. I jumped back on that school bus. I pulled out, turned right, and all of a sudden my eye caught something, and I thought, "That's money." I pulled over into the middle turning lane, turned the flashers on, opened the door of the big bus, and looked both ways, got out, and chased it, and it had blown over to the curb, and it was a $20 bill. So I got my shoes for $40. I have told that story, and I have joked about it, and I even talked about me and Dallas. I went home and I was telling them about it, and he goes, "You think there's any more out there?" I said, I don't know. I'm for going and looking. And so on the way, I think, to the gym that night, me and him went back by, and I'm looking to see if any other 20s are floating around. But I found that $20 bill, and I have found more money than that. There have been times when I've found like 40, 60 bucks, stuff like that. But that is the one that really kind of remembered, that brought joy to me, because it was like a quasi answer to prayer. Be honest with you, today I might be a little scared to pick it up because of the fentanyl and all that stuff that is laced on things. We had a family in this church many years ago. They live up in, I think it's Clayton or Cornelia now. Their oldest boy, he picked up a $100 bill outside of a restaurant, and he spent like 3 days in intensive care with fentanyl poisoning that had been laced on that money. And so I'd be a little hesitant these days, but man, this was 30 years ago, all right? And so anyway, you find something and it just kind of brings you joy. Right now, I got a hard target search on a white golf shirt. Don't know where it went to. Several years ago, Hub gave me a shirt. He played in a golf tournament. And evidently the one they gave him was huge. So he gave it to me, and it was Hit 'Em for Hemophilia. And he's remembering that tournament. And he gave me that shirt, and I have loved that shirt for years. Well, springtime's coming. It's time to start wearing some short sleeves. And the other day, I'm looking for that shirt, and it is not at my house. I haven't taken it off anywhere else that I know of. But I have looked in everything. I've told Debbie, I said, has Allison and Joe got it downstairs? She's like, they know what your shirt looks like. They don't have your shirt. But I've looked through the closet. I even looked in what is called my go bag. I have a red bag that I'll take to Israel with me that'll have stuff in it, and I'll carry it on a plane. But sometimes I just keep a go bag where that I've got a change of clothes. I've got, a toothbrush and, some deodorant and one quick change of clothes. And that way I can go somewhere overnight quickly. And I've even looked in that thinking, maybe I went somewhere and I just threw it in the bag. I can't find that thing right now, but when I do, it'll bring me joy and it'll show up. I don't know when, I don't know where, maybe during the millennial, but it's going to show up. And so there is great joy when you find something that you have lost. Now, these three parables today, I have really, my whole Christian life, I've kind of looked at them really kind of as the same thing. I know that the items are different. And so I want us to look at it just with a little bit of a twist tonight. All right? Now, verse number one, it says, then drew near unto him all the publicans, or the tax collectors and sinners, for to hear him. So this is a connection back to the last thing that Jesus said in our previous chapter. You remember last week we closed with verse 34 and 35, and he said, he that hath ears to hear, let him hear. So what do these publicans and what do these sinners do? They come to hear him. And so you have the Pharisees and the scribes, and they are murmuring, saying, this man receives or is friendly with sinners, and he eats with them. Now, we'll not turn back to it, but in the same gospel here, back in chapter number 5, verse 29, you have the story of Jesus, and he is at Levi's house. Levi, of course, is another name for Matthew, who was a tax collector. And so we see this as the setting. And Jesus is eating with them. He is being criticized. This is a constant thing where that the Jewish leaders would look at Jesus and go, he's hanging out with wicked people. He eats with wicked people. He even eats with tax collectors. A tax collector was a Jewish person that had collaborated with the Roman government to collect taxes from Jews for the Romans. You have several of those in the scriptures. There are two that I know by name, Matthew, Zacchaeus. And so you've got these tax collectors, their reputations were so shady and they were so despised that in a Jewish court, their testimony was not allowed. In other words, you put people under oath and they would say, you can't believe a word that comes out of his mouth. They would not accept the testimony of a tax collector. And so this is the people that Jesus is being criticized for hanging out with. Now, the first thing that I want you to do is I want you to look with me as we begin in verse number 3. He says he spake this parable unto them. But then I want you to underline the next little phrase, what man of you? Now, who is he referencing here? Well, he has been talking to the Pharisees. He is now talking to the publicans and the sinners, and the Pharisees are still hanging around, and they're criticizing, and he turns and looks at them, and he says, what man of you? What man of the Pharisee sect? Having 100 sheep, if he lose one of them, doth not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after that which is lost until he find it. So the first parable that we see this evening is the lost sheep. Now, as I said, this is going to be a little different twist on what I've always thought, and perhaps you've always thought, and maybe you're smarter than I am, and you've thought about this already before what I'm about to tell you. But I want you to just think about this first parable, and you have this man, and he's probably a man of some wealth. He's not Abraham wealthy. He's not Job wealthy. But if you got 100 sheep, that's not bad. I mean, you've got wool that you're going to be selling, you know, at least once a year, if not twice. You're going to be able to have ewes that give birth. In just a short time, you can probably go from 100 sheep to 300. All you've got to do is just manage them pretty well. From time to time, I watch farming type stuff. I know usually cows usually birth about once a year. Kevin, am I right about that? About once a year. The reason I asked Kevin that, because his dad is a cattleman down in Hazelhurst. I think that's such a cool thing. But with sheep, there are times when you can have many sheep, as many as 3-4 sheep that would be born to a ewe lamb, a female lamb, in a year. And so you can build that flock pretty quickly. And so this guy's got 100 sheep, and so he's a little bit wealthy, all right? Let's say he's comfortable. But there's one that is lost. And so what does he do? He leaves the 99. He goes out into the wilderness, which is a kind of a wide open desert place. When we think of wilderness, I think of something like lost in the Amazon. But biblically, when you think of wilderness, you just think of it a wide open desolate place with mainly a bunch of rocks and dirt. That's what I want you to visualize. And so you've got this wide open place, and he is searching for one sheep. Now he finds it. This is a beautiful thing. He puts it up on his shoulders, and we've all seen the pictures where that we have Jesus and he's carrying the sheep. And of course, metaphorically, Jesus is carrying us. We were wounded. He bound us up and he's put us on his shoulders, and he is the one that is carrying us, and we don't even have to have an effort because the master is the one. And we've all seen those pictures. So we see there's a great compassion that the man has in verse number 5. He rejoices. What does he do? Verse number 6 says that when he cometh home, he calleth together his friends and his neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost. So in other words, he went out, he found that one. Now, when you rejoice, most often you think in terms of, well, there's probably going to be food involved. Allison asked me numerous times as she was a kid growing up, do we ever do anything at our church that doesn't revolve around food? And I said, not a lot. And what is that? It's a time of joy. It's a time of rejoicing. So let me ask you a couple of questions here. Was it really wise for him to leave the 99 alone in the wilderness to go after one sheep? I mean, I got a bunch of chickens. I count them about once a quarter. If it looks like we don't have quite as many as we used to, then I'll try to count them as they come out of a coop one morning. But I'm not thinking that, you know, if we lost all of them, that I'd go looking for one. I'd be thinking, well, he's probably gone too, or she's probably gone too. I don't have but one he. That's Solomon. But she's probably gone as well. And so was it really wise for him to leave 99 sheep in a flock to go after one? Well, that was the decision that he made. What about if a predator would have killed the 99 while he was gone? He would have not been there with his staff and with his rod. You remember Psalm 23, thy rod and thy staff? Well, a rod was like a billy club, and that was a weapon that was used. And so he was not there to offer protection. So what if a predator had come? Would that have been a wise decision? Probably not. What about if the lamb that he was looking for, what about if he found a carcass? Or what about if he found nothing? You think about that. If you're rejoicing and you're celebrating and you're going to have some kind of meal, how many animals you got to kill for that? Probably 4 or 5. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, butchering a whole cow. We're talking about a small little lamb. And if you're going to have a cookout and you're going to celebrate finding a lamb, if you're going to have food, you're probably going to have to butcher some more. And so economically, is it really feasible to go after one? So what is this teaching? I think that Jesus is seeing or showing these Pharisees that it was all about getting more, all about things. Go. You can't give up on that one. You got to get that one. Now, I love the fact that, you know, that I was out in the wilderness alone and Jesus found me. But don't forget, when he says, what man of you? These are not believers. These are not the disciples. These are not people that had become followers of Jesus like those ladies that would help support the ministry of Christ. What man of you, what man of the Pharisees would not do this? Why is that? Because they valued that sheep. And there's a second parable. And this is in verse 8 through 10. And so in verse number 8, it says this, either or, you know, suppose at a woman having 10 pieces of silver, if she lose one piece, which is, think of a day's wage. Years ago, there's some commentators that think that this woman here is a woman that is looking at her dowry that was paid. And so she has this little headband, and it has these silver coins that are on this headband, but one of them is gone. And so she has 10 pieces of silver. She loses one, and she will not rest until she finds it. And so it's dark in the home, so she lights a candle, and she begins to look under this piece of furniture. She begins to go through the pockets of this particular garment, and she's walking through that little home, and she is searching every place that she can do. She can't find it. So she gets a broom, and she begins to sweep. And as she sweeps up a pile, she's looking through the little dirt. And what is she trying to find? She's trying to find that lost coin. And it says that she seeks it diligently until she finds it. Well, what does she do when she finds it? Look at verse number 9. She calls her friends and neighbors together. And what does she say? Rejoice with me, for I have found the piece which I had lost. And so, what is she so excited about? She is excited about the fact that she had lost something. That's a key word, something. And she has now found it. And so, we have the shepherd that lost a thing. And we have a lady that lost a thing. But now we come to the third parable. And that is found beginning in verse number 11. Now, before I get to that, I ask you some questions about the shepherd. Let me ask you a couple about the lady. Would she have not ultimately found the coin anyway? The same way that I'm going to ultimately find that white shirt. It's going to show up. But she was so OCD about it that she was just not letting it go until it was done. She had a little Debbie in her. Okay, not the little cupcake. I'm talking about my wife in her. When she gets something on her mind, I mean, she is like focused. And I'm like, you know what? You don't have to get that done. And she's getting better. But boy, 40 years ago, I mean, she would laser. And so, wouldn't she have ultimately found it? Yeah, she probably would have. Her happiness, though, depended upon a single coin. Should I be ultimately just always sad if I can't ever find that shirt? No. It's just the thing. Years ago, we had David Gibbs preach for us. And I love that guy. He is so brilliant. And he just talks in a normal tone. But the things that he says are so profound. And he told the story one time. And this is the way it went. He had a partner in his law firm. And they had been together for about 20 years. And he thought, well, you know, the anniversary of opening this law firm is about to come up. And, you know, and my partner, he's a good Christian man. He loves the Lord. I want to get something special for him. And so he said he likes to have a nice pen, like those Montblanc type things. I don't want anybody to ever give me one of those because I lose pens right and left. It's almost as bad as reading glasses. But he said he went down to a jeweler that specialized in high-end pens. And he said, I'd like to buy a pen for my business partner. And the man said, well, certainly we've got some here. You know, here's some, $30, $40 ones. And he said, no, you don't understand. He said, I want to buy something a little more special. And so he said, well, I mean, I've got some over here. I mean, they're like 100. He said, no. He said, I've heard about a really nice expensive pens. And he said, now I've got some in the back. And he said, I'll show those to you. He said, I'd like to see that. And so he went and he opened up a nice case and he had just beautiful pens that were in there. And they started at like $1,500 a piece. $1,500 for a pen. That sounds nuts to me. But evidently money was no object in his mind because he loved his partner. He loved the fact that they had done business together and they had just been just best friends. He said, I want that one right there. And so he paid like $1,500 for a pen. And he gave it to his business partner and said, hey, here's an anniversary gift. God has blessed me and you in this business together. Our law firm, we have just, you know, bloomed and blossomed, and we've done well, and I appreciate your doing your part. He's like, well, David, that's wonderful. I appreciate that. And he said, the next day, I walked over to his door, knocked on his door, come in. And he said, when I walked in, the man was there, and he had that $1,500 pen, and he was stirring his coffee cream in the coffee cup. And he said, what are you doing? He said, stirring my coffee. And he said, don't you realize that that pen was a gift, and it was an expensive gift? And his partner looked at him and said, David, it's just a pen. It is just a pen. And he said, it was just a pen. He said, I wish I'd have bought him a $20 one, but it was just a pen. It was a thing. And it was something that David Gibbs valued more than his partner valued. And so you've got this woman that valued one coin as opposed to looking at the other nine. And you have a shepherd that values one sheep as opposed to the 99. And now we come to the third parable. I almost said poem, but the third parable. A certain man had two sons. And these two sons, we know is the younger and the older. And so we'll look at the younger first. He says this, that the younger one came to the father and he said, give me the portion or the inheritance, my share of the goods that falleth to me. Now stop right there. An inheritance is usually something that is given when the parent dies. Now, I know that there are times that parents like to give it before they die. I can think of numerous people that have told me with their own lips, I'm giving this to my kids now so that I can see joy in them instead of waiting till I die and not see it. And so this younger boy, in a very arrogant way, he comes to the dad. And there's no indication that from the boy's age that the old man is going to croak anytime soon. It seems as though he's a young man. He's probably in the late teens. He's certainly not more than the early 20s, this younger one. And so you've got this young man, and he says, hey, Dad, give me my inheritance. Well, that meant that the father had to begin to divide up, and he will end up giving the older boy his share, and being the older boy, he got a double portion. And so, as the father divided it up, he gave it to them. He gave his living. Now, he didn't give them everything. He kept something to live on, but he gave a great portion to those kids. And it says, and not many days, in other words, this boy just couldn't wait to get out of Dodge. And what did he do? He gathered all together, and by the all there, I take it to mean the money that was given and the clothes that he had, and he took a journey into a far country and there wasted his substance with riotous living. So in other words, we've got the younger one, and what does he do? It's not until he gets pain that the repentance actually comes. There are times that I want the Lord to give people pain. It's usually someone that's out in the world, and I'm like, Lord, don't kill them. Just squeeze them a little bit. Get them to understand that things are always better at the Father's house. But some people are hard-headed, and some people just will not listen to wisdom. And so, you know, they have to go to the school of hard knocks. And so this young man, He can't wait to get away from his dad. He goes into a far country where that his dad can't know anything about what he's doing, and he's living riotously, and now he has spent his money. He's got no money. He has no food. He's having to work for a man that raises hogs, which is anathema to a Jewish kid. And he's looking down in that pig trough and thinking, you know what? There's a potato down there. I'm going to get it before that hog gets it. And it says he would fain to have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat. And so you've got this boy and he has no money. He has no friends now because his money's gone. And it's amazing how that happens. You have money and you got friends everywhere. You have no money and you're all by your lonesome. And so he is now coming to himself because of the pain that he is enduring. And all of a sudden he begins to sober up mentally. Hunger will do that. I told somebody not long ago, a guy said, well, I won't take that job because I can't make what I normally make. And they asked me what I thought. I said, he's just not hungry enough. You know, I mean, if you get hungry enough, you do what you got to do. And so he's like, you know what, even at my dad's house, even the people that are the servants, the slaves, man, they eat better than I'm eating. And so he begins to do a 180. He's going back, and when he comes back, he doesn't come home with a sense of entitlement. He left with a sense of entitlement. Because of who I am, the old man ought to be giving me this. But he comes back and he's like, no, Dad, don't do that. Let me just be a slave. Let me live in the barracks with these other folks. And so we see the younger. Number two, we see the father. Now, can I tell you that his focus is totally different than the sheep owner and the coin owner? Those two were focused on things. He was focused on a person. Who was that person? Well, in this particular case, it was his son. Now, many of us, we look at the father and we see the rebellious son, and I'm telling you, if there's ever been a story that God's people identify with, it's the prodigal. I mean, it is the prodigal. How many times have we had Christian parents that have beat themselves up because they had a child that went off the rails? I remember one of the things that helped me so great, Bill Monroe is a mentor of mine. He pastors in Florence, South Carolina. I was talking to him one day about it, and I was just a young preacher at the time, and I'm trying to do right and raise my family right. And he said, Tommy, you need to remember this. It's as clear as day. We talked about things for about 3 hours on this particular day at Camp Bob Cooper. One of his staff workers gave me an inside job or inside information, and I made it my job to get this. He used to love Snapple iced tea. And when Snapple was a big thing and Rush Limbaugh would advertise it, I'd find Snapple and I would get the raspberry flavored and the peach flavored and all of that. Well, he liked that Snapple, and so I took a cooler of that to Camp Bob Cooper to camp one summer. And when I pulled up to that door and knocked on that door, he goes, what you got? And I said, I got you some Snapple. He goes, come on in. And we sat there for 3 hours, and he gave me this bit of advice when we were talking about kids. He said, I know a lot of preachers, myself included, that have beaten themselves up and have almost quit the ministry because they had a kid that didn't do right. He said, but don't ever forget this. God had two that did the same thing. He said, Adam and Eve were in a perfect environment. They had never sinned, and they chose wrong. And I'm thinking, that helps me a lot right there. That helps me a lot. And so this father, I think that he tried to do right. And he loved that kid. Maybe he doted on him too much in the same way that Jacob doted on Joseph. And so you've got this father, and he's concerned about a son. Look at verse 20. He arose and came to his father, but when he, the son, was a great way off, notice the next phrase, his father saw him. In my mind, I'm visualizing the old man standing on the front porch, and he is just looking and hoping and praying that he sees a figure coming up the lane. That's what I'm visualizing. And so, when he saw him, he had compassion. There was something that swelled up inside of him. That's my boy. That's my boy. And he ran. Now, he probably didn't run fast because he's an old guy. By the way, I had somebody ask me to play basketball tomorrow night. I haven't picked a basketball up in a year and a half, and I hadn't played in 25 years. And they're like, we need a body. And I'm thinking, I might go suit up. 69 years old thinking about playing basketball. I may be dead before Sunday. I don't know if I'm going or not, but I'm thinking about it. Back to the message. He ran, fell on his neck, and kissed him. Now that neck was dirty. He hadn't had a bath. He had ragged clothes. But the father did not care one whit. He loved that boy. He loved a person. What about the older one? Well, the older boy, he hears the noise. He's been working in the field. And what do we see the problem with this boy? He's self-righteous. The first boy was just rebellious. He knew what he had done. But this second boy, he had those inward sins that are sometimes harder to root out. And so he says this. He said, I stayed home, but you never gave me a banquet. You never killed the fatted calf for me. He said, I didn't go out in sin. I didn't waste everything on sinful activities and immoral things. I stayed here. And he said, I've always obeyed you. Well, when you have that kind of attitude, there's a self-righteousness that's there. And so you can see the father, he had two extremes that he had to deal with. Now, there's some similarities between these two boys. And I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but the similarity is this. Both of them would like to have celebrated without their father being around. I don't know if you've ever thought about that. The younger boy went to a far country so his father wouldn't be near. But when you look at verse number 29, he said, I'd like to celebrate with my friends. He didn't say, I'd like for you to be with us, Dad, and you celebrate with my friends. It was as though neither of those boys really wanted the Lord around. And I say the Lord there intentionally because in that story, we have God the Father. There's some people that think that God in his presence diminishes or hinders the joy and happiness that we have or wish to have. That is a million miles from true, but yet both of these young men felt that way. They didn't think that it was possible to have joy with their dad around. I don't think that neither appreciated the love of their father. Now you think about that for a moment. This father had worked hard to provide for those kids. Now, I don't know if the mother had passed on. Perhaps when the younger boy was born, perhaps she died in childbirth, which would have not been uncommon for a situation like this parable. But I just know this. I know that it seemed as though they did not appreciate everything that has been done for them. They didn't have to be a slave for somebody else. They didn't have to go to the ranch, you know, across the mountain and work for a guy over there. They had a dad that had been successful. They had a dad that had accumulated many things for them to enjoy. We know that because when the younger came back, he said, let me be a servant. And he told the servants, he said, you go get the best robe. You go get me a, one of the rings out of my room there. You get a ring, it's of sonship, and you come and you put it on my son's finger. He's not going to be a slave. He's going to be my son again. And so they didn't appreciate the love, but the truth of the matter is they both were slaves. The younger one was a slave to his passions, and the older one was a slave to his self-righteousness. Now, do I think that all three of them can kind of overlap to a certain degree? I do. But I want you to go back to verse number 3, and it talks about at the beginning of the parable and then the beginning of verse 4, which I ask you to underline. What man of you? Which of you Pharisees would go after the one, or which of you religious women would go after the coin? And you go after things and you do not go after people. Now, with that in mind, I want you to look at a couple of more verses. I want you to look at verse number 7. And I want you to see something that is, it's marvelous. I say unto you that likewise, what is the likewise? If you look back at the previous verses, how that there was joy over the sheep, Jesus says the same way that there was joy over the sheep, there's joy in heaven over one sinner that repenteth, more than the 99 just persons or righteous in their own eyes people which need no repentance. In other words, you've got those Jewish people and they were looking at things, but you've got the people in heaven, and I think in this case the angels in heaven, they are looking and there's joy there. Why is there joy? Angels aren't saved the way that we are. The angels were all created at one time. At one time there was a third of them that rebelled and followed Lucifer. They were cast out of heaven, and that was a one-time decision. That decision only had one chance, and a third of them fell, and two-thirds of them did not fall. And so these two-thirds that are in heaven and are messengers back and forth, they're looking, and there's joy in heaven. Why is that? Because they know that God loves seeing people saved. Same thing we see in verse number 10. Likewise, the same way that there was joy over something as simple as a coin, here it says there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner that repenteth. So in other words, the important thing is not one sheep, even though that's fine to go after it. It's not a coin, even though it's nice to be able to get that coin. The most important thing is a person. And so what does Jesus do? Jesus eats with tax collectors and sinners. He is willing to go and give them the gospel. I think that you and I, we ought to be willing to talk people. That does not mean that we participate in their sins. If you look at the younger son that went off and lived in riotous living, he was not given a pass. I don't think anywhere in here where you can say, the father's like, now if you need some more money to go back to the far country, I'll give it to you. You don't ever get that kind of vibe there. And so you've got God that loves people, and these angels see that. And so what are they doing? They're looking. They're the watchers. And as they watch and they see this person in Iran turning from Islam to Christianity, and they're like, yeah. And you see somebody in Venezuela and they turn from paganism and atheism to Christ, and they're like, yeah. And they're excited about that. I want you to look at 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 12. Unto whom it was revealed that not unto themselves, but unto us they did minister the things which are now reported unto you by them that have preached the gospel unto you with the Holy Ghost sent down from heaven, which things the angels desire to look into. You've got the angels of the Lord that are interested in what's happening here. And when somebody trusts Christ, somebody that was lost is found like the prodigal, that gives them great joy because they know that brings happiness to the Lord. One more verse to show you how interested they are in what we're doing. Look at 1 Corinthians 11, verse 10. This is a passage that deals with women covering their heads. Dr. Rice used to preach on this all the time. He had talked about bobbed hair and bossy wives and how that we ought to not shave our heads if we're ladies. My wife never got that memo. Every time I turn around, she's getting her hair cut shorter. She's like, it's easier to fix. Here he says this: for this cause ought the woman to have power on her head because of the angels. In other words, the angels are looking, and you don't want to confuse those guys because, you know, they're like, well, this is what the Lord wants you to do. Why are you doing something different? And so because of the angels, the ladies are told to do a certain thing. And so these parables, all three of them, while they can overlap with one another, I do think that they are different to a certain degree. And when you see which of you, it can be connected mainly, I think, to the first two. And then we see a picture of God the Father and how that, what does he care about? He doesn't care about the sheep. He's got a fatted calf he's going to kill because there was a son that came home. A son that he didn't know if was alive or dead, but he was looking, and all of a sudden that boy got back to the house and everything got better in the father's heart. And so that's our parable for the night.